working the day watch out of Nowheresville. This is The Un Show. Now, good morning, everybody. I'm the Schmooze Master, Jeff Schneider, always speaking of Un. No dogmas or isms, because we don't give a shit. We prove it every day on The Un Show. I'm here with my good buddy, who's been out in the woodshed, the amazing Dobie Maxwell.
We're not at necessarily at night. What if people were on at 6:30 in the evening? It's not morning.
Yeah, we're recording in the morning, actually. You know, we're in our skivvies doing this show.
They'll break the third wall, man. The fourth wall, the fifth wall.
I'm just grateful at my age I can break any wall.
Decrepitude catching up on you?
Oh, my God, man. Yeah, this morning I woke up. I heard some wheezing. It was my cock.
You like prunes, do you? Liverwurst?
Have you tried prunes?
Have you tried prunes? They're not that bad. How do you know you're getting old, man? It's just, you know, did you wake up one day and does this catch up on you?
No, I have the mind of a 20-year-old man, seriously. It's limber. I have youthful exuberance. But 59 years old, and, you know, physically speaking, I'm doing okay. I mean, considering I lived a profligate lifestyle for most of my life, you know, I pretty much trained on Big Macs and didn't watch my diet very well, and I'm in the process of losing weight. I just lost, you know, like 30 pounds.
You dropped 30 lbs?
Yeah, 30 pounds. I got 30 more to go, and then I'll be fat.
Just regular, just plain old fat.
No, I'll be down to one. Believe it or not, I'll be down to 190. Mm-hmm. But then I look skinny. I carry a lot of weight. So at almost 250, people go, man, I didn't realize you weighed that much. I said, yeah, I carry it all over, and that's my, you know, I don't have it in one particular area, but it's just very poor diet. You know, you got to stay away from processed foods. If you can stay away from processed foods, you're doing your body a heap of good.
If you can pick six correct lottery numbers, you will be a millionaire.
Well, processed foods, you know, you can go to the store and not buy processed foods. You can eat a lot of whole grains and fruits and vegetables. If you can stay with that stuff, you'll be doing okay. So
very difficult to do.
It's very difficult, but you have to have a discipline like my cousin, Dr. Kirk Schneider, who was in town over the last weekend. I went to see him speak at the Society of Humanistic Psychology conference. Mm-hmm. It was down at Point Park College. So you're hanging out with academics. Anyway, he's got such a lifestyle that for the last 30 years, he pretty much, when he wants to have a treat, he treats himself to a big bowl of steam.
Where do you get that? Does he get the drive-thru window in the McDonald's?
Well, when my Uncle Murray, his father dropped dead in 1980, and my dad dropped dead in 1974 of heart attacks, he mm-hmm. just went completely the other way. So no fat, nothing. And he's totally committed and disciplined to it. But lately, in the later years, he's kind of loosened up a little bit. He'll have some peanut butter on occasion and chocolate chip cookie, you know, depending, you know. So the deprivation.
Whole wheat ding dong.
Yeah, the deprivation thing is tough to get around and the committed lifestyle. But he takes tofu with him wherever he goes for protein. Doesn't want to eat beef or chicken that's prepared in restaurants because it's in butter. But then there's now studies coming out saying don't use margarine. That's bad because it's all processed, the margarine.
Correct.
It's all chemicals. If you're going to have something, have butter. And I agree. That's what I have. I have butter on my toast. Screw that margarine. It's brutally bad.
I put butter on my margarine.
Do you?
Yeah.
I put butter on my ass, man.
Butter?
Because I know what side it's, I know what side it's always been buttered on, baby.
You got a stick of butter and just...
Oh, yeah.
Draw the smiley face.
Yeah, I draw the smiley face on it. I like a good rye bread with butter on it. Margarine makes the bread soggy. The vegetable oil in it.
It is oil.
It's the high fructose corn syrup.
That'll kill you. That stuff sticks on your inner organs like turtle wax on a car.
Yeah, that's right. You're exactly right. And it inflames the arteries. It's the inflammation of the processed food that constricts it. You know, the cholesterol was supposed to go through the arteries. Evolutionarily, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So if you don't have constricted arteries, the cholesterol in the blood goes through like it's supposed to do. Your body manufactures cholesterol.
Uh-huh.
So if the processed foods inflames your arteries, that's where you get the constriction. besides eating badly, you know, that's not helping either.
Well, you can have a treat once in a while, but I
right,
really,
right.
It's going on a year now, about 10 months since my diabetes diagnosis. I have changed my diet completely different, and now it's a habit. I don't miss Big Macs. The doctor said I wouldn't.
Right.
I thought he was full of shit. He's not full of shit.
Right, he's not. And when you think about a Big Mac, you get nauseous.
I do get nauseous.
Yeah.
Seriously. No white bread, no white flour, no white potatoes.
Yeah.
Sodas were huge, white sugar, all that. If it tastes good, spit it out.
Yeah, yeah.
But I feel great, better than I think I ever have.
That's great, man. It's great to hear that you'll be around doing the show.
You don't know that. I could take a bullet from my smart mouth.
Take a bullet from one of your detractors?
One of my detractors. There's seem to be a growing list of those, but I don't really care at this particular point.
Isn't it great to be free?
I've always been free.
Well, my point is you don't care about the detractors.
I really don't, because the point is I try to – if you have a problem with me, anybody, if you come to me and say, hey, man, I think you're an asshole because of this, 999 times out of 1,000 I'll say, man, I'm really sorry I do that. Let's try to not do that, and how can I – I have courtesy and respect for other people, but it seems it comes the other way. People get a mindset they're not going to like you. They're not going to like you.
Yeah, but this is the selling problem in America. You don't sell yourself like Willie Loman tries to sell himself.
Uh-huh.
You know, you sell yourself warts and all. So you say what's on your mind, and you're not completely insanely truthful. I mean, like really ripping the walls down.
I'm not Simon.
No, you're not Simon on American Idol.
Like that's intact.
But the people that have the power don't want to be... they don't want to be called out on the carpet, so to speak. You know, they don't want to be called out by anybody because they have the control and the power, and you're suffering because of that.
And that's okay.
Now, if you were Sarah Palin, you'd be headlining the clubs because they don't like what she stands for, but she sells tickets. If you were a draw, everybody'd be taking your call, man. They'd be loving you. They'd be bowing and scraping. They'd be scraping the goddamn guacamole out of your asshole. They would be. You know that.
I do know that. And it's totally fine. I'm a big fan of George Clinton, as any regular listener knows, to this to the end show. And he's got a song on every album that's got a lot of swearing in it or something that's completely filthy disgusting. And there's one of them called Icka Prick. And that's kind of it's basically dirty rhymes. And it's not really that great of a song, but it's not. And he says he likes to put one of those on every album he does, just so that Grammy bullshit will stop. So they won't consider him for a Grammy. He goes, "Hold my Grammy while I go pee," as in P-Funk.
I love it.
He doesn't want to do, you know, he'll put one on just so he won't be considered for a Grammy by putting one of those on his albums, so he can be free to do what he wants to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think there's something about that, you know, to be able to have enough to make a living. And I'm not trying to be one of these guys that are living in a Volkswagen bus and eating teak wood. I'm not saying that. But just, you know, be a mensch, be a real person, you know, warts and all. Just accept people. And I'm not trying to be anybody but, you know, myself.
I mean, I don't understand, you know, the guy you allegedly besmirched, was he so venerated and vaunted? Was he a legendary man?
If you're just listening, I wrote a blog a couple of years ago about a booking agent who died. And a lot of times booking agents tend to – I mean, you come in from a booking agent's point of view and I'm coming from a comedian's point of view. I'm sure you had maniac comics that wouldn't leave you alone.
Sure, sure, all the time.
You know, and I have booking agents that are hard to deal with, and it's just it's a pimps and whores kind of situation. You know, and this guy would just call me on Thursday at 4 o'clock. And I called him at 4 o'clock. I told you to call me at 2. No, you said 4 o'clock. I've got one comedian to look after. You've got 5,000. What are the chances that the error was you? Well, I'm busy now. Okay, that's fine. You're busy. But he did it because he could do it.
Right.
And then he died. And then I said, I don't think there's going to be a lot of tears shed for him. Not from my end. I know a lot of comics that didn't like him but they would jump through the hoops because they wanted to get the work from him.
Right.
And I wrote about it, and I just basically, if I bashed anybody, it was myself. But, I got some nasty feedback from it. And to this day, it's been almost, I think, 2 years now. And we're never going to book you.
I know from a booker's point of view myself that no booker wants to book anybody ever. And they only do it grudgingly because it's not a pleasant experience. So that's all it was. You were bothering him, even though he told you to call at that time. He knew it. It's all confrontation.
Right.
That's how I felt about it. So-and-so's on the phone for you. You know, I've been guilty of that. You know,
Well, it's a lottery. You're a gatekeeper.
That's right. That's all it is.
I just think there's some human courtesy.
I agree with you. You know, but that's what he was doing, man. He was not in the mood for it. You know, and I've heard this a million times about a million bookers, and it's always going to be that way. And it's whether you're calling a booker or you're calling an agent that you want to represent you, and you sent a script over there. Did you look at my script? Did you look at my spec? My spec script, you know, and they call it a spec script because you can't spec nothing from these motherfuckers.
Yeah.
You know, and they're never around, and they'll call you back. And when they call you back, it could be 2 days later, and that's good. You know how it is.
Yeah,
in that world, that's good. They call you back in 2 days. That's amazing.
Yeah.
So, you know, that guy's a fool. The people who take umbrage to your blog, they're assholes, complete assholes.
But I just don't think it's important enough. Why would anybody even care? Maybe I shouldn't post it, but I thought, okay, I write as a discipline just for me, to give me something to do. These are my feelings and what I think. If nobody likes it, they don't have to read it. They don't have to be that over.
I mean, couldn't you paint the guy in a positive light and as part of your discipline?
No. I didn't feel that way about him. I'm saying I looked at it over and over again since it was a couple of years ago.
That was my Steve Allen homage, the cackle, okay. The Steve Allen cackle.
But
no,
I look at it, it wasn't that bad. I have a policy. If it's a bad situation, I mention the situation, but usually no names. Very rare. This, I mentioned his name all over the place because I wasn't writing it in a bad situation. I was poking fun at myself. The guy died. I'm not happy that he died young. I didn't wish that. So I'm not going to piss on his grave. I didn't say anything like that. I'm just saying it was just the reality of, okay, he wasn't nice to people. Now he died. Now nobody really cares from comics point of view, and they want to see who's going to be the next booker so they can try to get work. That's all it's about. It's like when a comedian dies. You all see on every website, where was he booked next week? Ha, ha, ha. Gallows humor.
Right. And I remember taking some grief from Johnny Henton, the black comedian, after Robin Harris died. And when Robin Harris died, I said to him that night, well, I guess you move up one space.
Okay.
And I know Johnny from Cleveland, Ohio for years and years and years, and he got so mad at me. He really wasn't getting my point that there's only one black comedian or one fat comedian or one female comedian at any given time that, you know, is the most famous it's not a demographic, in that category. Like Louis Anderson was a fat comic for years. Now it's Ralphie May. There's never two or three of them that are heavy that are really popular, you know, or Dirty Women, like Lisa Lampanelli is now. And it was Joan Rivers before her. And so
Rusty
forth.
Warren before her.
And Rusty Warren. So when Robin Harris died, who was they were expecting big things from him. He was in Do the Right Thing. He was one of those guys sitting on the side of the street under umbrellas, just putting caps in people's asses, verbally speaking, you know.
Sure.
He looked
older than he was.
Yes, he was the Greek chorus, part of the Greek chorus in that film. So I said, I guess you move up one space, and he got mad at me, you know. But I mean, it never went viral and never, you know, came down because, you know, I don't really care, and I could argue my way out of my why I said it because I know the guy really well, but it's exactly what you did. And so forth. But nowadays, you know, you can't do that. I mean, you can't do that. Right. But it was very, I read the blog, very benign, really benign. And I don't see where the blowback was from. I don't.
I didn't have any horns out, anything like that.
No.
They took upon it. But the funny bones, unfortunately, if you're not a comedy aficionado behind the scenes and you're listening to The On Show, It's a large chain, and it's in the Midwest. I happen to live in the Midwest. They're in towns that I'd like to work, like Columbus and St. Louis and Toledo and all over the place. And it'll just be, you know, Omaha. So the Omaha booker just sent me a Get Bent email. Dave Stroop out of Columbus did. Al Canal in St. Louis did.
He said Get Bent.
Get Bent, period. Party over, oops, out of town.
Wow, man. Well, there's always Tom Sobel.
I get along. There's another. I never had a problem with Tom Sobel
until.
No. Seriously, he's a mensch. He treats comics like human beings.
Right, Right.
And that's all you do. And I think he really cares about the comics. A lot of times I've heard stories where he'll forgo his commission and try to make the thing work for everybody because he knows the comic can drive a long way. And you know, in the long run, he's in it for the long haul.
Yeah, that's right, man. It goes to that great joke. Her pussy was so big, Tom Sobel was booking it.
Gas, food, Sobel gig.
Right, next exit. That's right. I mean, the guy would book, you know, these crazy one-nighters for years and years and years and years and years and years. The Comedy Caravan.
Comedy Caravan.
Guys are still working the Comedy Caravan. 35 years later, still working the Caravan.
I work for Tom. He doesn't have nearly as much as he did now.
I know that. But I know Ward Anderson, the pithy driveler of Facebook.
Yeah.
And I know Ward fairly well, so if he hears this, I don't know, man. Maybe I'll be shit in Toronto. My name will be shit. I'm full of shit in Toronto. I'm full of shit in Jacksonville, as Jackie Mason said. But he couldn't sell any tickets in Jacksonville at a concert. But in Miami, I sell out in 1 second. But in Jacksonville, I'm full of shit. I love that. You know, you didn't take it as a personal insult because it's all cowboys and farmers up in Jacksonville.
Pretty much, yes.
But, Tom Sobel, you know, goes back to the early days of the comedy club, literally the comedy club. He was a pioneer, you know, when those things were coming around out of the nightclub closings, the epidemic that every city lost all the eclectic bookings, you know, of the nightclubs where they book a variety of entertainment. Out of the ashes came the comedy clubs that narrowed down and just started showing, you know, promoting and showing, doing comedy shows. So he was there way in the beginning. We opened up on 51 in Pittsburgh, you know, and he booked my room occasionally from time to time. The Boston comics, you know, he turned me on to, and the Mike McDonalds and the Stephen Wrights and the Barry Crimmins and Steve Sweeney's and you name it. So he was there, and he's still out there. He's in Louisville now. Still in Louisville or Lexington?
Louisville. I was in Louisville.
Yeah, okay. So he still has his room there?
No, he sold the room to somebody else.
Oh, he did, finally. I know finally. He sold it once, and the guy died a day later after the closing or something.
I don't know if it was a day later, but it was pretty close.
Yeah, and he got it back.
And people don't realize that, you know, my booking, my gimmick is Mr. Lucky. Guess who was booked the week that the guy died in Lexington? There's comedians tell me, like, you know what, I heard the guy's name was Jeff Gilstrap. Actually a good guy. I liked him a lot. And a smart businessman, very very aggressive. He was part of that town, man. You go to Lexington, you'd be on 8 different radio stations and TV shows. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
For Lexington, Kentucky, he knew everybody. And you know, people said, you know, when Jeff Gilstrap died, I didn't even have to look who was booked that week. It was me. So they didn't do a show. It was supposed to be Wednesday through Saturday. We didn't do one Wednesday and Thursday. Didn't do a show. And then Friday, they had a funeral in the club, and there was funeral lilies, you know, behind the stage. And the whole staff was sad and stuff, and I had to try to be funny. That was one of the most brutal nights ever.
All right, so he bought it from Tom?
He bought it from Tom.
Okay, yeah. And then Tom got it back, and then, yeah. Yeah, that's rough, man.
It is rough. Then he sold it, Tom sold it to somebody else now.
Right. But that was the guy passed away 6-7-8 years ago.
Yeah. That was
a long time. So he had to hold on to that club for many years before he could find another buyer.
Yes, he did.
And that's a tough racket, man, if you're not running it, you're not there. I know Tom's not there. Is he there to run? He doesn't show up there, does he?
Yeah, he does.
Oh, does he?
A lot, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, what are you going to do, man? At least you're not, following Gallagher 2.
Gallagher 2. Didn't Gallagher 1 sue him?
Gallagher 1 sued his brother, and then Gallagher just had a heart attack.
Two of them.
Two heart attacks.
Yeah.
Wow. I never liked his act, even when he was on Merv Griffin for years and years and years skating, coming out in skates. You know, smashing. I never liked smashing the, even before I was in comedy, smashing the watermelons.
He went that direction. If you listen to some of his regular stand-up, very intelligent.
No, it is intelligent, and it's political, kind of like Mark Russell, you know?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But not funny. Not big belly laughs, but he did tremendously well. He marketed himself well. He was selling out 2,500 seats before anybody was doing that. Anybody, any comedian. I mean, after Steve Martin, I should say. But he found a way without becoming a household name and a superstar. You know, he never did sitcoms, never did films. He was a performer. Gallagher.
Leo Gallagher.
But I didn't like it. Never liked it. Thought that, you know, put on the raincoat. in the front row. You know, people would just go there to be, splooged upon at the shows. And I thought, God, this is dumb. You know, I wouldn't want to be sitting in that front row. I don't want to be part of it. Part of it, man. You know, you're part of it. You're part of the cosmos.
For all that money, it didn't seem like you had anything left over.
What do you mean?
I mean, it didn't seem to be the rich. You know, I don't think he was.
Oh, because he was still performing, like 62 years old, still out there.
Yeah, working small venues though.
Yeah, yeah.
He worked Tom Sobel's room in Louisville. That's just a regular comedy club.
Yeah, maybe he blew it all, or tried to invest in something and lost a huge chunk.
Well, I think part of it, he did invest in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which made big money.
Right, that's the one he invented in.
But I'm saying that was a success.
Yeah, that was a huge success. So where's the dough?
I don't know.
Or maybe he's got a ton of money. He just loves to perform.
Maybe.
That's Ron Jeremy.
Ton of money, loves to perform. Who are you going to call?
Who are you going to call when your grandma's horny?
Ronnie J. The kosher salami. The hard salami.
Oh, yeah. Great film.
Hard salami?
Oh, my God, man. I didn't tell you that film I made called Hard Salami was the gayest porn movie ever made.
Oh, I didn't know about this.
Oh, yeah. I made, we made $120,000 on a pure scam of homosexuals in New York City. So we came up with this idea. We were going to make the most outrageous gay porn film ever conceived by the mind of a man. And the concept was called Hard Salami. So I rented Radio City Music Hall, which holds 6,000 homosexuals at any given time.
Right.
And I said, we don't have a budget. How are we going to make this movie? Then in the middle of the night, I sit up straight, like a wedding cock.
A blue veiner.
Blue veiner. That's how excited I was about the concept. And I said, well, I'm not gay. I don't know if I could produce the ultimate gay movie, but how do I get around this prickly problem? So I came up with this idea. I was going to go to the Carnegie Delicatessen, and I was going to get a camera that had time-lapse capabilities. Mm-hmm. And in the back of the, behind the counter on the wall, they hang 5-pound Hebrew National salamis there.
Okay.
They let them dry out until they become, after a period of about 5 or 6 weeks, hard salami. So I put a camera on a 5-pound hard salami. And over 6 weeks, I filmed it. Right. Then I spent most of my money on a PR person. All right. To promote Hard Salami, to get the name dropped into the gay publications like Mandate. You know what I mean?
I do.
And I was getting all this buzz. I sold out the venue in like 10 minutes at $20 a ticket, 6,000. You do the math.
That's a lot of dough.
At the premiere, they ran the film. People were booing like crazy. They wanted to lynch me. But I was already out of town, man, in my little two-seater.
Uh-huh.
You know, the wind's blowing through my hair. And it's me. It's me driving the car. And sitting next to me is a big money bag with my arm around it. Fade to black.
That's a short film right there.
That's the legend of Hard Salami.
You just went through all the trouble of making it. We got the same experience.
Yeah, wouldn't that be a great little short film to make?
It would be pretty funny.
Yeah.
Now casting on Craigslist, 6,000 homosexuals.
Yeah, extras we need for this crowd scene. You know, yeah. And you get the gayest guy you can. The gayest gays you can find. I'm talking about gays who were shot out of a cannon gay.
When you walk in the building, the smoke alarm goes off gay.
Right. When you open up the closet door, it's spring-loaded, and balls of fire are coming at you.
Liberace would have said, that guy's gay. That's so funny when Liberace goes on the Tonight Show, you know. So Liberace, you're married. Oh, just can't find that right girl.
Yeah.
Can't find the right girl, Johnny. No, the one with cock and balls. Nope, can't find that one.
Oh yeah, that was amazing. Just shows you how people want to live in their worlds. The women, I mean, the married women and the spinster types who thought he was straight. That delusion and illusion, you know, they bought
really?
Into.
Wow. Yeah. He was from Milwaukee.
That's right. He was from Milwaukee. Vlad, some crazy Polish name. Polish.
Big long Polish name. Six inches long and hard on a Polak, his last name. You never heard that one?
No, I love it. That's great.
That's a classic, man.
That is, yeah. Yeah, I love it. God, that's so economical, too.
Walter, Vladek, yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy.
But he, by all accounts, a nice human being, a wonderfully nice man.
Yeah, and then when he died of that crazy watermelon diet he was on, everybody knew he had AIDS. You know, he wouldn't want to talk about it. You know, he couldn't talk about it. You know, he would deny it, even though he probably knew it. But he wouldn't. He maintained to the end. He was worried about his legacy after he passed on. You know, it's crazy.
He was old times, old school show business, man.
Yeah, like Roy Cohn. You know, Roy Cohn.
Uh-huh.
The attorney that defended McCarthy and you know, he was a bad guy. He would vilify gay people, and he was totally gay, you know, closeted gay man, you know. And even at the end on 60 Minutes, he didn't have AIDS. He had liver cancer, you know.
Right,
but everybody knew he had AIDS, man. You know, he just didn't want to man up.
J. Edgar.
You know, these guys just don't want to be their true selves. Too much. It's too.
Does anybody really care? I mean, I guess I heard about that. I was a forced churched as a kid, and you know, the dogmas and isms that we talk about on the show, and they vilify homosexuality. And then I got a chance to, you know, in my early 20s working at the Funny Bone in Milwaukee. There, I had a job at the Boston store, which is a department store in downtown Milwaukee. A lot of homosexuals work in that business. I'm talking to them. You know, it's the suffering that they tell me, the story that they couldn't come out to their father. It's like, if it's in you, it's in you, man. I guess just as a human being, I'm not gay, but I sure wouldn't, you know, a joke's a joke, but I wouldn't hate it. If my son came out and told me he was gay, I'd still love him.
Of course. Of course you would. Okay.
No, I don't think it's that cut and dried, man. That's
I think you know, a man's masculinity is tied up in many ways, in many facets. And if your son is gay, I could see how some men feel it's a diminishment to their own masculinity. You know, that's the problem. They can't believe it, that they fostered, they sired a gay son. You know, that's tough for a lot of men, depending where they how they grew up in their childhood with their fathers. You know, there's a million factors. It's tough. But, guys like Liberace, Roy Cohn, you know, it's just tough. You know, it's too bad. They would be so much better off if they could do it, if they can come out. But, you know, hey, good things come out of it. You know, like, you know, the movie Hard Salami, for instance. You know, it's an epic motion picture. Check it out. You'll love it.
There's a comedian, I'm not even going to mention his name, but I've known him for 25 years. And he's not doing stand-up now anymore. But he came out maybe, I don't know, several years ago. And he kind of showed up and he just told everybody that he was. And he was, you know, he thought he would get some backlash and nobody really cared. And I was talking to him about it. And his father was, he said he'll never be able to come out to his father ever.
Yeah, it's too bad.
It is too bad, man. Yeah. I feel bad for the guy.
Yeah, man. Well, you know, we can't save the world, but we can put this one to bed, folks.
We can.
Yes.
We're done.
Yes.
That was the best show we ever did.
Fuck yeah. You got that right. And I want to thank everybody for listening. Check us out on iTunes, Podomatic, PKNRadio.com. We're on from 6:30 to 7, 5 days a week, Monday through Friday. Unshow Weekend Rewind, 5 to 7:30 on Saturday night on PKN Radio. And we love having you here, man. So check us out, and we'll see you on the other side. We love you. Bye-bye.
Bye.